States against Obaid. Ms. Babbage.
Good morning, Your Honors. Linda Babbage on behalf of the appellant, Khaled Obaid. Counsel. This matter is up on appeal from the district court's denial of defendant's motion to compel the government to file a Rule 35B motion for reduction of sentence. The issue before the court as we see it, Your Honors, is whether the district court erred in denying the appellant's motion where the government failed to fulfill its promise to treat Obaid and his brother, Khaldona Sawi, similarly as it had promised for the purposes of the plea agreement, sentencing, and cooperation.
So what authority did the district court have to hear your case? You were saying that the government had broken a promise that you think is there to file a Rule 35B motion, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why isn't that, under our Richardson case, something that has to be brought as a 2255 petition?
Your Honor, I think it goes back to the reason he had brought it as a motion to compel, from my understanding, was that he was going back to his original plea agreement.
But it was years later, and we know that at least by sentencing time, he's aware of the supplemental agreement between Asawi and the government.
Certainly, Your Honor, but I don't think that Mr. Obaid was quite aware of the implications of the supplemental plea agreement until after.
Why does that extend his time to file this kind of motion? I mean, people find out later on all sorts of things. And sometimes they find out in time to raise the matter with the court, and sometimes they don't. And so I'm not clear why. I mean, I accept everything you say about when he finally figured out that maybe he wasn't getting a benefit he thought he was going to get. But I need more than that to understand why this was the right time to file something and whether he picked a vehicle. Because if he really was supposed to use a 2255, then we have different problems because he already filed a different 2255.
He had, Your Honor. But you're introducing it's something that certainly wasn't addressed at the district court level. I believe that with respect to the right time, Mr. Obaid, I think, did not have the benefit of counsel, and at some point after his ability...
He was kind of a tough client, actually. Didn't he have quite a few counsel?
He did. And there's no denying that Mr. Obaid was tough. I mean, the government knew that from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mr. Obaid would probably agree with that. I think that the time that he had chosen to file the motion to compel, he believed that he didn't have the benefit of counsel throughout that time. I believe that at that point, he believed it was the best vehicle to try to get what he understood was the basis for his plea agreement enforced. He had seen, I think, his brother proceed, and he had always assumed, first of all, it can't be forgotten that he had been sitting in county jail for a period of 16 months without some of the access that he would have normally had during that time. I think he filed at that point in time what he believed was the best vehicle in order to have this initial promise, what he had based his plea agreement on, enforced. And so I don't think that the 2255 avenue was what would it have even been contemplated for him. At that point, he was truly interested in saying, there was a promise made to me. I based my plea agreement on that. The vehicle for me to enforce it is they turned and changed the benefit of that promise at some point. So I'm filing a motion to compel pursuant to Rule 35B because that's what my brother got. Now, I don't know that he was sitting in jail for some time, and I think he believed up until that point that he would have had that as an opportunity for himself as well. But at that point, he had discovered that this was an option for him to file the motion to compel, and so he moved forward with it.
Well, he thought that it was, and I guess that's my concern. You know, people file all sorts of things, as I'm sure you know, and some of them are correct and well taken, even if they're pro se, and some of them are not. And so if somebody files some random thing, 5 years after sentencing is completed, the proper action for the district court often is simply to dismiss and say, you no longer have the right to file this thing. Had he figured out or gotten counsel and tried a 2255, he could have also perhaps made a case that it wasn't successive in the sense that the statute means it, if it was based on new information that somehow couldn't have been, you know, I don't even know. It's at least a topic that could have been considered. But I'm concerned that he really doesn't get out of the box on this because of the way it all unfolded.
Well, I think, you know, with the district court said that he had met the threshold, and I was satisfied with that. And I suppose, as I've been arguing it, I think that he fits into the box because, as the way I see it, is if you date back to the benefit of the promise, I think it was probably his only vehicle. I mean, he was sort of stuck with very few vehicles to enforce a promise that was made to him at the beginning.
So now what do you do? I mean, if we look over everything that I've been saying, the district court makes factual findings that are adverse to his position. Why should we disagree with its conclusion that no such promise was ever made?
I don't think that the district court found that no such promise was ever made. I think the district court stopped short. For example, we were looking, the district court said, I can look at the four corners of the plea agreement and nothing further. I think the district court erred in making that decision. What the district court could have done is truly take a look at, and I don't think the district court did, was what was the plea agreement premised upon. And I think that Mr. Obed and his brother had testified sufficiently that they both were induced into signing this plea agreement based upon an initial promise
but
to treat them similarly.
But they don't see that, the district court, in the plea colloquies. I mean, why isn't the district court entitled, we've said this often, to rely on what's said in the plea colloquies? You're saying, in a sense, there was a secret promise that underlay.
I actually don't say it was secret
agreements.
Whatsoever. I think it was fairly out in the open. I mean, they had identical plea agreements. They had had. These were discussions that Mr.
But
Kevin Powers.
Written down in writing.
Certainly not.
We're going to move in perpetuity and lockstep with each other.
But this
the government
court has
certainly didn't think so. And the government lawyer at sentencing said in a very conditional statement, if he cooperates and if, and I don't have the authority to do this, but maybe he'll get the same agreement.
Excuse me, Your Honor, I didn't mean to interrupt. I don't say that that statement actually binds, but what it does is it makes the recognition of the underlying promise and obligation. In fact, the government in that statement says, we recognize our obligation to Mr. Obed, and we will file something on his behalf should he continue to cooperate. The problem for Mr. Obed with that statement was that term was never defined. And in fact, the term had always been defined to him as long as Mr. Asawi continues to cooperate and provide the significant information, Mr. Obed shall have the same benefit. And in fact, some of the information that Mr. Asawi had provided that ultimately inured to his benefit for the supplemental agreement was given during that time frame that Mr. Obed had a reason to believe that anything Mr. Asawi said would inure to his benefit. And I understand that it isn't written in the plea agreement, but this court has said that it can look beyond the plea agreement because of the high responsibility that the government has in its plea bargaining. This was a benefit that the government, a bargain that the government made. This was something that Mr. Powers indicated that he set forth in order to induce both parties to enter into a plea agreement. Both parties had agreed after conference with their lawyers, and it followed up with the plea agreement. The agreements are similar to the letter other than for Mr. Obed's criminal history, and I believe that he had a good faith reason to rely upon it. I see I'm in my rebuttal time, and I'd like to reserve the remainder of the time. Thank you.
Counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. The defendant, Obed, and his brother agreed to resolve the charges against them in a plea agreement that required them to cooperate. The cooperation plea agreement required that the government would make a motion at the time of their sentencing for a reduction in the period of incarceration. That is set forth in the plea agreement. The government made that promise, and at the time of each of their sentencings, the government did make a motion for downward departure, and Judge Manning granted the motion. That was the end of the promise that had been made to Mr. Obed. It was the end of the promise that had been made to Mr. Asawi. The documents, the plea agreements that are identical as it relates to the cooperation paragraph but have other differences in terms of the factual basis and the forfeiture judgments specify what it is the government has agreed to do, and the government agreed, and the government did in fact do it. There was no agreement, and the district court so found, that the government would treat these two defendants identical or fungibly in perpetuity. There simply was no such agreement. And after the district court had two evidentiary hearings, it concluded that the documents, the plea agreement specifically, was not ambiguous, so there was no need to go beyond the specific language of the plea agreement, where both defendants swore under oath before Judge Manning and also in the evidentiary hearings that followed that the entire sum of their agreement was embodied in that written agreement, and there were no outside promises, there were no additional representations, and there were no guarantees to either of them that there would be anything done beyond what was in the four corners of the plea agreement. The district court rejected the understanding that Obeid and Essaoui bring before the district court for the first time 4 years after their agreements are entered and sentencing has occurred. And the district court finds, specifically, there was no promise.
Did you ever complain about this being treated as just sort of a really delayed motion to compel your filing of a Rule 35 motion?
Your Honor, I objected to the timeliness of it. However, because Mr. Obeid had filed his 2255 and had completed and the record should reflect that Mr. Obeid was represented by counsel from the day he entered his guilty plea through the time his first appeal was completed that was filed in violation of the plea agreement. He had counsel during that period. He filed the 2255 pro se, and that was completed by the time he filed this Rule 35 motion.
It never occurred to you that this was maybe a successive 2255 or anything else?
Well, Your Honor, it certainly occurred to me, and it was a topic that was considered. But under Rule 35, if the topic of cooperation or the use of it hadn't been known until some time after the information had been provided, it couldn't be tested or couldn't get the departure or the reduction in sentence until that point in time. So you can put together a hypothetical whereby he would have completed his 2255 litigation and still potentially have the ability to get a Rule 35 if the information just came to his attention or alternatively had been something that the government only realized the use of sometime subsequent to the filing
right.
of 2255.
So my question has been, in a sense, what's the proper vehicle for a person in Mr. Obeid's position to use to raise that point that, you know, yes, the government has now realized that this information is really going to be of value in a prosecution, and it didn't file the Rule 35 motion for me, so now I'm going to complain. Do you just kind of throw a motion in the hopper? Do you file a 2255? What do you do?
I think, Your Honor,
Richardson says you file a 2255.
Well, but Richardson was in a different procedural posture at the time because Richardson had only recently completed the proceedings in the district court. It wasn't years down the road, as Obeid was, having done the first appeal, having done the 22.
Why should that matter?
Pardon?
Why should that matter? If the holding of Richardson is that you have to use 2255, the passage of time doesn't make that holding go away. The passage of time just says you have to show one of the circumstances that under 2255 allows a motion to be filed more than a year after the conviction became final. It doesn't say, oh, just throw 2255 out and do something else.
What?
Do you think Obeid has shown one of the things that would allow action more than a year after the conviction became final?
Well, no, Your Honor, because I think Obeid is his argument, his filings, and everything about this request is completely baseless. But
we have also said, by the way, that if a district court proceeds on something that should be classified as a second or successive 2255 motion. We have to vacate and remand for want of jurisdiction. Judges just don't have any authority to act. Is that what we need to do here?
Well, Your Honor, I think we can get to the bottom line that the government wants you to get to in either that manner.
Affirming and vacating are different bottom lines.
They are, Your Honor, but the practical...
You heard in the very first case, the very first question in every case is subject matter jurisdiction. And the fact that the parties haven't paid any attention to it doesn't make it go away.
Your Honor, I don't think that the parties didn't pay attention to it. I think
they certainly don't discuss it in their briefs.
Well, I don't think it was discussed because, given the time frame of the timeline in this case, and there is between Richardson, Wilson, and Bishel and Billings different guidance as to the approach and the language of Rule 35 that would seem to indicate that if the information only recently became relevant, you could file the motion.
How did Wade begin?
Pardon me?
How did Wade begin? That's the Supreme Court's case. Was it a 2255 action, or was it something else?
Your Honor, I don't know.
Okay.
I only remember the test.
Look it up.
Okay. Unless there are any further questions, the government will rest on its brief and request that the decision of the district court be affirmed.
Do you want to file anything related to this jurisdiction question?
Your Honor, I will. If that would be helpful to the court, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anything further, Ms. Babich?
Based upon what the direction the court is taking, and I simply think I'm better off to say that I would like to supplement to discuss the issue of jurisdiction.
We will give the parties 7 days to file supplemental memoranda addressing the question whether the district court had subject matter jurisdiction in light of Richardson and Nunez. Nunez is the case holding that an unauthorized second 2255 proceeding must be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction.
Thank you.
And I would appreciate it if you could also address the question whether, if new facts have now made the filing possible, whether it falls under the second or successive limitations or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement when the memoranda have been received.